Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
On the Empire Podcast this week, we invite Jack Reacher, Never Go Back star Kobe Smulders into our wonderful pod booth, and she expresses a wish to, yes, never go back. All that plus the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast. It isn't surprised to hear that they're rebooting Willy Wonka. After all, Donald Trump's already rebooted the Oompa Loompas. Boom! Satire. Amazing. Getting political on the Empire Podcast. Oh, yeah. Nothing bad comes of that. Anyway, hello, pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. First up is our geek queen, a lady who is not throwing away her shot of having an introduction that doesn't mention at least one of the Winchesters, Dragons, or Hamilton. It's Helen O'Hara.
Hello, or all three.
Or all three.
There we go.
Why not? But yes. Only one this week.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, well, technically all three.
Exactly.
Oh, I've out-clevered myself.
You really have.
It's like the Wachowskis when they were writing The Matrix Revolutions. They didn't mean to put all those layers in. It just happened.
There were layers?
There are total layers. Oh, okay. It's all very... Anyway. Hello, anyway. Welcome. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Do you realise that's the only line I know from Hamilton?
Not throwing away your... You should,
yeah,
really,
yeah, because
he
was on SNL.
Yes.
I just feel that I don't want to go. If I get tickets, or I'm lucky enough to get tickets for it, I do not want to go in knowing the songs.
This is
then it turns
incorrect.
Into a Duran Duran concert where you know all the words.
It is genuinely, I've said this before to you repeatedly. Duran Duran, I don't.
It's an up-to-date reference. Yeah.
I've never been to Duran. I don't even like Duran Duran.
Sure.
Why did I go there?
Sure, you
yeah.
Don't. Anyway. It doesn't matter in this case because the lyrics are so great. It doesn't hurt you to know them. It is, if anything, a benefit.
Do you think?
Yes, 100%. I'm usually not one for listening to the lyrics beforehand, but in this case, I have zero regrets.
You see, my wife... tricky game. A lady to whom I'm intimately acquainted.
Sure.
With
whom
rude.
I'm intimate. Yeah, well, you know, we've done it.
What?
Not boasting, but yep. At least once. Right, where am I? Yes. She is listening to the Hamilton soundtrack at the moment. She tells me the lyrics are very, very good.
Yes, but that's because your wife is a wise woman.
Yeah, oh,
well, mostly.
Apart from marrying me and the whole business. But I will say that I can't listen to the Hamilton soundtrack at the moment because lovely Rebecca Ferguson has a new album out and I have to devote all my attention to that. Anyway, what's happening? Yes. Next up, we have, you've already heard him a little bit, our very own George Harrison lookalike. They call George, of course, the Quiet Beatle, and in many ways we call this man the Quiet Poddle, until, of course, he embarks upon one of his legendary career-destroying, rage-fueled rants. Beware the wrath of John Nugent.
Hello.
I love
he
that.
He sounded so wrathful.
I love that.
Oh my god, it was terrifying.
Just, I love teeing you up, and then it's just like, "Hello, everyone. Hi, how's right. it going? Yeah, what's got you angry at the moment, John? What's happening? What are you mad about? You're usually mad about something."
Oh yeah, it's a bit of a queue in the kitchen this morning.
Yeah, the kitchen's pretty abominable in this place. I saw your tweet from you. You have jettisoned all cynicism because you've just seen La La Land.
Yes, I defy anyone to be rageful after seeing that film. My goodness me, that's just I was just dancing out of the cinema. It's
really?
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I couldn't tell who I fancied more. Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are jostling for my affections, and it's very hard to know.
Yeah, he's a very confused man right now, John Nugent.
I felt some very strange feelings.
So let me ask you this. So you went into a musical cold. You didn't know the lyrics. Did you find that helped?
Oh,
I mean,
my goodness.
Would it have helped if you'd known the lyrics to La La Land going in beforehand? Just saying.
No, you're not. You're wrong. In this case, like, I'm not saying I always advocate knowing the songs before a musical. I'm saying in the Hamilton's case, the soundtrack is so freaking good that it deserves to be listened to.
Right. Should we have a question? The question comes from Tom Paisley, at Tom Paisley via Twitter, who asks... this is a weird one, but I like it. Who, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe... I think he was aiming it directly at me. He added me, so I think he thought, ooh, Marvel Cinematic Universe, that'll get his attention. Who in the MCU, brackets, or just cinema, close brackets, would have the highest electric bill?
Well, no, this is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that question.
I mean, because I think, certainly among the Avengers of the MCU, there's a real commitment, actually, to either renewable energy or their own energy sources.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean... Tony Stark, you would think, obviously, he's going to have an enormous energy bill, right? But he has literally his own power station. It's the giant arc thing.
Self-sustaining, isn't it?
Self-sustaining. Yeah. So he doesn't actually have a high electricity bill at all.
And even if he did, in fairness, he is a multi-billionaire and he'd be able to handle the electricity bill.
That's
also,
true.
He's very frugal. He goes on moneysavingexpert.com and looks around. he uses U-Switch quite often and just keeps changing it up, switching his credit cards to 0%. Interest rates and
well
just
done,
flipping
Chris.
Them around.
Yeah.
Something I should do, but I don't. but there you go. Otherwise, it would be Tony Stark. Absolutely.
So, and then, you know, Thor, obviously, like, if he gets short of electricity, lightning, hello.
He doesn't pay for that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be something ridiculous, like the highest energy usage in the MCU is probably Spider-Man trying to do an experiment and it going wrong.
Yeah.
I mean... Hawkeye's got that entire farm, unless he's got a wind turbine.
I didn't see one.
I think Samuel L. Jackson talking on Skype with his massive video screens, that's probably going to run up a bit of a bill.
But that's a government, you know, bill, isn't it? I mean, that's not him personally.
Okay. And Captain America obviously comes from the olden times and he didn't have electricity,
exactly.
So he
that's
doesn't
right.
want to have anything to do
I mean,
with it.
How much energy does a phonograph even use? Like, it just doesn't seem likely.
Yeah, I believe he hand pumps it.
Yeah. Wow, gosh. And then Doctor Strange, we haven't seen it yet at the time of that we're recording this.
Yeah.
But you've got to assume he's got mystical energy going on, like some crazy stuff. Guardians, do they even have electricity bills in outer space? Your answer's on a postcard, please.
And the Guardians, they're kind of scoundrels, so they wouldn't have...
They wouldn't pay it.
They'd
tap in illegally.
Yeah, they would.
Which
would
is also what Black Widow would do.
Well, I think Black Widow might have the highest electricity bill because she has all those, you know, she has those blue bits in her costume.
Oh, yeah,
and she has
recharge those.
And of course, she must be annoyed because the new Black Widow costume, they changed the charging dock, so it's also the headphone dock. So it doesn't. It's really annoying. So she now has to get two different sets of headphones.
Yeah, at least her costume is waterproof now.
But only to a depth of 3 meters.
Yeah, only for like half an hour.
Yeah, but she has a much better camera.
Imagine the Black Widow can only swim 9 feet. That's it. Then otherwise she invalidates the warranty. Because you presume that's StarTech, right? That's got to be StarTech.
Yeah. I think the idea is he's given everybody a little bit of an upgrade, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe Cap.
Vision. Does Vision need charging?
No.
He runs on an Infinity Stone.
Infinity Stone.
Yeah.
All right. So
does the Infinity Stone need charging? Is it sort of just a...
Also, he can eat. So essentially, even if he is recharging, it's through the normal means of converting food into energy.
Well, how does Thanos power his giant space toilet? And where does he empty it?
It's solar power, isn't it?
Solar power.
And he empties it into space.
Oh, imagine you're just flying along and then you goosh into one of Thanos' massive space poos.
Goosh. Ew.
Yeah, you just...
That's why ships have shields.
That's why. That's why the mission to Mars that Elon Musk is talking about is going to take... You know, they're worried about what they say is radiation shielding.
Yeah.
That could fry Leonardo DiCaprio. Have you seen this? So Elon Musk has been talking about... Have we done this? Have we got onto this? But anyway, he's talking about sending a manned mission to Mars. So he wants to populate Mars because we fucked up this planet completely. So we need to move on to somewhere else. Hashtag explicit warning for listeners. He wants to send people to Mars by 2026, I believe. He wants to have people out there and start colonizing it and all sorts of stuff. And Leonardo DiCaprio
has said that he wants to be one of the first people to do it. And where he'll probably get attacked by a space bear, no doubt. But
I do think that will help drive recruitment as well. Actually,
I think you have to pay
in the supermodel sector of the.
Oh, I think he might bring a couple of his own.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Have you not heard that?
No.
I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. Like, listen. I mean, I'm fascinated by genuine space travel as well as sci-fi.
Yeah.
Books like Red Mars, the Kim Stanley Robinson series, if you've read those, just
Ilium and
fantastic. Those are the other ones. Ilium and
other,
Olympus.
Yeah.
Ilium and Olympus are hilarious and brilliant and wonderful. Love them.
By Dan Simmons.
Dan Simmons, get after it if you haven't already.
Get on it.
Get on
Smash it.
It makes no sense, but it's brilliant.
It makes
total sense, but it's confusing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So on the question of
electricity bills.
Who else, like in cinema?
For me, it has to be Emperor Palpatine, because not only does he have to foot the bill for Vader's big old battery pack, which powers his breathing apparatus, and that ain't cheap. Although it's batteries, so I guess it's not technically. Anyway, he also has to pay the electric bill for Coruscant, which I imagine comes in
pretty high.
It's probably 80-90 quid a month, I'd say. I mean,
that's a few 50 p's in the meter, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? It's like, I have to refill the meter. Lord Vader, get me some 50 p's.
And again, there's actually evidence of sort of geothermic.
Oh, you're right.
Work, isn't there?
In fact, in Revenge of the Sith, he even declares unlimited power. Because
he's consolidated his monthly bills.
He's consolidated. Yeah, that'd be amazing. Unlimited power! Consolidate your monthly bills!
I feel there are advertising execs taking really careful notes of this right now and calling up Disney.
So maybe it's not him.
Maybe it's not him. See, I had a similar thought about, we were talking about Blofeld and his giant volcano base.
Oh, yeah.
That's obviously an enormous base. And it seems to be electric powered cars. And that seems to be pretty high in electric. But again, surely geothermic energy there.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
So
I think films are quite responsible. Like, even you look at the Doc Brown with his, super time traveling car.
First thing he does.
Yeah. No. What an inspiration. What a legend. So have we actually answered Tom Paisley's question?
I'm not sure.
So the highest actual electricity bill, I think it might be Batman, because there's no evidence there of other forms of
that's how they get him.
Generating,
That's how they get him. They go, Mr. B-Man of Batcave, suspiciously close to Wayne Manor, has run up an electric bill in the hundreds of thousands. And some guy goes, "Oh, excuse me, have you paid your electric bill? Need to check your meter." And that's how it all unfolds.
Right. All unfolds.
That's how it all. Yeah.
Yes, it's the bloody Eon gets him, isn't it?
Yeah. Next thing you know, Bruce Wayne panics. Because you would panics, snaps a guy's neck. Oh no! I've become everything I feared, everything I hated.
He's broken his one rule that he may or may not have. We're not sure.
I'm kind of flexible about, depending on the situation. It's okay. Then he has to cover it up. Then obviously they send a second guy, and he has to kill him too. Before you know it, the Batcave is littered with the bodies of dead electricians.
This is super dark.
And it begins to stink.
Oh.
It really begins to stink.
Yeah.
So then he has to have more fans installed to get away with the smell. And so his bill goes up. It's a never ending circle.
It's a vicious cycle.
It is.
This is a bleak bit of fan fiction you're writing here.
I think it should be the next movie.
The Dark Knight rising electricity bill.
Yeah. Until eventually even Bruce Wayne, billionaire playboy, can't pay his electric bill. And the end of the movie is just him in the Batcave. As the lights go out, and he's just sat there, and Alfred can't make the tea because there's no.
He probably can't get into the cave.
Can't get in the cave. Why would he want to go in the cave? Cave's full of dead, rotting electricians. And that's it. End of the movie. Finn.
Wow. I mean, it's dark enough for the Snyderverse. So it really could work.
You are welcome, Ben Affleck.
Yeah, you're welcome, help Hollywood. Yourself. All right. Okay. If you want to have a question read out in the Emperor podcast and treat it with the respect it deserves, send them in to us via Twitter. We're at Empire Magazine. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast. You can email us Empire. No, that's not the right email address. What's the email address? podcast@empireonline.com. And we're on Facebook, of course, as Empire Magazine as well. Okay. Has there been any movie news this week?
There's been quite a lot of trailers. Maybe we should sort of mention those first.
Let's talk about trailers.
So, trailers-wise, a new trailer for Assassin's Creed, which I thought was much more kind of action-packed and gave you a little bit of an idea that there's going to be a lot more modern-day stuff or mm-hmm. near future or whenever the heck it's meant to be stuff than you might have expected, but in a quite interesting way, sort of setting up some other characters there. Mm. So, yeah, I was pleasantly impressed by that, actually.
Yeah, I'm still not entirely 100% sold in this movie. It does look like it could be interesting, could have some good action scenes. Mm. I'm intrigued by the modern day stuff, the fact that there seems to be some sort of, you know, almost modern day Spartacus thing where he is going to, not the Spartacus had to break out of a prison, but he's trying to lead an uprising in the modern day, while at the same time fighting and leaping off buildings in the past.
And there's an interesting change in the building he's leaping off, as I'm sure we all noticed. In the previous trailer, he was leaping off the Giralda, the bell tower of the cathedral in Seville, and now he seems to be leaping off the half-built cathedral itself.
Noticed that.
Yes, I definitely noticed that.
Yeah.
I mean, so what can we draw from this? That he prefers Christian architect to Moorish? I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
You know, that's exactly what ran through my mind.
Took the thoughts out of my head. Yeah.
I thought to myself, whatever Helen just said.
Yes.
That.
Something about
that.
Architecture. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a pointy bit.
That's correct. There are several. Yeah.
Several pointy bits.
Anyway, it may be a different shot or a different person, but I thought that was interesting. But loads of amazing leaping and general
lots
sort
of jumping.
Parkour and such.
Good jumping. I mean, it'll look very pretty. Justin Kurzel has made some very good-looking films. Macbeth was obviously very, very visually impressive, and this one looks to be along similar lines. Mm. But I don't know. I'm yet to see a video game movie that I think is genuinely good. Sorry, Warcraft. I don't think anything has broken that curse yet. So
no, nothing has.
We'll see. We'll see if this is the one. Yeah. We also saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 trailer this week, didn't we?
Yeah, a tiny little teaser. Very little in the way of plot, really, or anything, really, but it was promising, I thought.
Yeah.
Baby Groot looks super cute, even cuter than he did at the end of the last one, which you would think is impossible.
Yeah, it was good to see Uga Chaka back as well.
Yes.
Not a character name, but
I believe that is the song title.
Uga Chaka.
Uga Chaka. Yeah, I mean, that looks fun, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
Chris, you like Marvel, don't you?
Yeah.
I've heard.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm wary of banging on about it. I like the trailer. It looks good.
I mean, there's nothing there to work with.
Nice images.
Yeah.
Fun exchange between Drax and Peter Quill.
Yeah. Need a hug. Oh.
Yeah.
And it did look like they were maybe back in the nowhere, maybe, in one shot. A little bit more kind of alien worlds and planets, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, this is very much a kind of, you like these guys? Well, all these guys are back.
Exactly.
Kind of trailer.
There was also a very well-designed teaser poster, which was just sort of black and white, and it had the lineup plus...
Yeah, Nebula and...
Yondu.
Nebula and Yondu just sort of leaning against the wall looking all pretty badass rock star style.
Yeah.
And the tagline was just, obviously, full stop, which is so great. I mean, there's a certain confidence that comes with that. I mean, the first teaser poster for the first film was, you're welcome.
You're welcome, yeah.
And there's a sort of nice bravado about it that not many films can possess, you know.
Yeah. I remember at the time that we thought, have they earned that confidence? And I think they did. I think they justified it. So, you know, fingers crossed. I'm really excited about that. There were other teasers this week, weren't there?
I mean,
I know it came out a couple of weeks ago. We talked about it already, but let's talk about John Wick Chapter 2. Mm. That was a great teaser. That's fantastic. Everyone's happy about that. Well done.
Yes. Amen. There was a new teaser for Legion, which was interesting. It looks like potentially one of the big new superhero shows. Obviously, Dan Stevens starring as, shall we call him David Haller in this case? But a young man who has some strange stuff going on in his head and isn't quite sure what it all means, I think it's fair to say. But if you know the character background there, I mean, spoiler, in the comics, he's the son of Charles Xavier and he has some very serious powers and some even more serious mental issues. So that could be a very intriguing show, actually. We've got an interview about that that's going to run in a future issue of the magazine, so do keep an eye out for that. Also this week, with the first trailer for Gore Verbinski's A Cure for Wellness, which I was, I have to say, on the page, I was inclined to dismiss as yet another sort of Eastern European cheapo horror. But there are some absolutely stunning visuals in that trailer, and it has me really quite intrigued. Of course, friend of the podcast, Jason Isaacs, is also in it, so that also speaks in its favour.
Love that man.
Absolutely. And can we talk about the... it's not a trailer per se. It's weird because Doctor Strange is out next Tuesday in the UK. It doesn't open in the States until I think November 7th. So we're getting it even earlier than we normally do. We haven't seen it yet. But I really like the Michael Cicchino theme from Doctor Strange, which is now available on YouTube, which is really trippy and weird and not at all what you'd expect from a superhero film.
It's very surprising, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's unlike anything Marvel have ever really done with their music. I mean, we've discussed on the podcast before how Marvel's scores tend to fade in the background a little bit. You know, there are some
with exceptions, obviously.
But they're not quite as distinctive. And this sounds incredibly distinctive. And sort of, I guess there's a bit of 70s prog rock in there, you know.
Very Floyd. Very Floyd.
Doctor Who, I think.
A little bit of Sherlock.
Sherlock, in
cases. It feels to me like, I said this on Twitter already, so apologies for doubling up, but it feels to me like it's the lost theme tune from the lost Doctor Strange TV show we never got from the 1960s or 70s, starring Patrick McGowan as Doctor Strange. It feels like that. It's really, really good. Of course, possible note of caution is that I believe it's from the end credits.
Right.
And the end credits of Iron Man 3 is Can You Dig It?
Yes.
Amazing piece of music by Brian Tyler, which bears no resemblance really stylistically to what
to the
goes
score.
Before.
Yeah.
So it might be the score is more conventional with more or an orchestral bent, and then they just whipped out the Mellotron and went nuts.
Absolutely.
Or the Moog or whatever it's called. So it's all very, very exciting.
Yes.
But can I talk about the news that's really excited me, and I know it's excited you. And John, I don't know whether it's excited you or filled you with rage.
Probably rage. That's my.
I don't think it is rage because I don't think this could ever fill anybody with rage. Paddington 2.
Paddington 2.
Of course.
Paddington 2.
So it has started shooting this very week. This week that we are in was the start of shooting. And they've announced, obviously, everybody's back, because why would you not be? You get to hang out with Paddington. they have some new cast members, and that is Hugh Grant. Is playing one of them. He is playing a fading, formerly fetid thespian called Phoenix Buchanan, who's the local
name.
Celebrity.
Great name.
And even better, a local safecracker and muscle man known as Knuckles McGinty. Knuckles McGinty.
Knuckles McGinty.
Will be played by Brendan Gleeson. Hopefully with his magnificent stripy beard, but we shall have to wait and see.
So all we know about this so far, plot-wise, Paul King is back. And in fact, before we get on to the plot, I detected a note of renewed confidence in this movie because they refer to it in the press statement as Paul King's Paddington 2. And of course, I think everybody went into the first movie not sure what this movie was going to be, not sure if it was going to be any good. Certainly, I went into it with very low expectations, and I got an instant family classic, a new Christmas perennial, a movie that is funny and touching and moving and really inventive and really established. Paul King, I think, is someone who's fantastically just warm and an interesting talent to watch. And so the fact that this is now Paul King's Paddington 2 is very, very exciting. So what's the plot? What the plot is about?
The plot is that young Paddington, helped by McGinty, Knuckles McGinty, is hunting for the thief of a rare pop-up book that was stolen from Mr. Gruber's, that's Jim Broadbent.
Yes.
Was stolen from his antique shop. So apparently Paddington had earmarked the book as a gift for Aunt Lucy's 100th birthday, Aunt Lucy played by Imelda Staunton, and was working odd jobs to save up the money to buy it for
Paddington.
Her, because he's so adorable.
Film of 2017. I'm calling it now.
I don't think you're going to get any argument in this pod booth, to be honest.
No, absolutely.
Sorry, everybody else.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this film. I hope it lives up to the ridiculously high expectations I'm voicing upon it already. I think it's going to be great. I know Simon Farnaby's involved with the screenplay, along with Paul King, and there's probably a host of great British gagsmiths coming in and punching stuff up. I think we have to assume that Hugh Grant's the bad guy in the sort of Nicole Kidman style of the first movie.
He does rather sound it, doesn't he?
Well, just by a process of elimination, there are two new cast members. We know there's a thief. We know that one of them isn't a bad guy. So process of elimination, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but very exciting. Very, very exciting indeed. I love the first movie, so I hope this one could live up to it as well.
Amen to that.
Amen. What else?
Also, slightly more worrying news. Now we've fortified ourselves by thinking about Paddington 2. Let's discuss the news just overnight that they're making a Willy Wonka prequel.
I'm sorry, but we have to. I don't think this is a bad thing. And the reason I don't think it's a bad thing is because of David Heyman, who is the producer of Paddington and obviously all the Harry Potter movies, is a man I think has proved himself of impeccable taste.
Well, that's true.
And frankly, I think it's okay. I think it's time. And I think this thing was inevitable. I think the sad recent death of Gene Wilder thrust certainly his version of Willy Wonka back into the public eye.
True.
There's so much interest in the character after that, that it's actually not a surprise. But knowing David Heyman, who's a man who's got his finger in the pulse, he's probably been planning this for some time. This doesn't feel like... The timing does feel like it's been inspired by Gene Wilder's death, but I would suspect that he's been working on it for a while.
I think, from what we hear, Warner Brothers and the Roald Dahl estate have been in negotiations for a little while, so it probably predates Gene Wilder's sad passing.
I'm not worried about it being knee-jerk. I'm just worried about... I mean, again, spoiler, you're going to see in the upcoming issue, we have a discussion about prequels, but I just don't think they're great generally, and it's one of these things I struggle to get excited about it in advance. That said, it could absolutely win me over. You're right, I haven't really disliked anything David Heyman's done so far. I think he showed extraordinary stewardship of the Harry Potter books. He's done an incredible job with Paddington, so you know, we hope for the best, but yeah,
I think they're pitching it as an origin story of sorts, so it's not going to be the same thing we saw in 2005.
Boring.
Yes. No, they do sort of demystify the characters a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of spin they take. I guess it's not going to be in the chocolate factory this time. I think it's going to be Willy Wonka on his travels.
Yeah.
Taking in new flavours or whatever.
It's basically going to be like Michael Palin, but chocolatier.
Around the world in 80 chocolates.
Oh my god, I think
that I would watch actually. What am I talking about?
Yeah, I would absolutely, if we could somehow de-age Michael Palin, I think he'd be a good choice actually. He'd be, you know, or just any Python, Eric Idle.
Any Python.
Any
yeah.
Python. So who, that's fantasy casted now. Who's your Willy Wonka?
Is it too obvious to say Benedict Cumberbatch?
It's too obvious to say Benedict Cumberbatch.
What?
Because he's strange, Doctor Strange. Willy Wonka's quite strange. Yeah.
American? British? What would you do? Where would you go?
I mean, I'm a big Roald Dahl fan, so the purist in me would want him to still be British.
I think he should be British just so we don't have that ridiculous situation we had in 2005 where they keep calling it candy. In a British accent.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so upsetting.
Remind me, because all I can remember of Tim Burton's version is the amazing joke about the Flags of the World exhibit. But that's literally all I can remember about the film. Was Johnny Depp's Willy Wonka British or American? I think he was American, wasn't he?
I think he might have been, but they were clearly meant to be in England because everybody else had an English accent. Yeah. But they kept using American terms for things in an English accent.
Oh.
And this is something that used to happen. I actually remember writing a really angry blog about it once. This is something that...
and another thing by Helen O'Hara.
But it keeps happening. You probably have been spared the horror, but the Tinkerbell movies... They had... It was a story set in sort of Edwardian England, but they kept talking about the trunk of their car and the creek rather than the stream, and just words that don't belong, and it's very distracting to me. So yeah, I think if you're going to go English, use English vocabulary and trust in children all over the world to figure it out from context in the same way that we figure out any words we don't know.
Damn straight.
From context.
Now I think about it, I'm pretty sure Johnny Depp's accent was American because
I think it was.
He had a bit of a Michael Jacksonist twang about him, like slightly.
But I mean, Freddie Highmore is the one I'm worried about. He was the one who had to say words about candy.
Poor guy. I think Hiddleston could be a good choice. He's tall. Yes. He's rangy. He can play weird. He can play dark, which you know Willy Wonka would have to be. But I think it has to be someone who's tall. Gangly Peter Crouch.
Wow, well, I'm on board.
He's big, he's red, his chocolates will screw your head. Peter Crouch. Peter Crouch. No?
Not
no
one? Really,
no one's going to bore with that?
No.
Okay. You had something else.
Also, a couple of very quick things this week. Colin Firth has joined Mary Poppins Returns, adding once again to the delightful lineup of the most delightful film that isn't Paddington currently in production.
We hope.
Oh, come on. Emily Blunt, Lin-Manuel Miranda. Have we mentioned him today?
Actually, we haven't.
Ben Whishaw again with that Paddington connection. Emily Mortimer. Mm-hmm. Meryl Streep, for goodness sake. Come on.
Yeah.
And now... another national treasure in
Remind
the shape
Remind me who's
Colin
directing
Firth.
It.
Yeah, Rob Marshall is behind the camera on that one with a script by David McGee.
You had me at Rob Marshall.
That's the name out of all those
convincing?
Names.
Did that sound convincing?
Out of all those names, I had you at Rob Marshall.
You absolutely didn't, but I was trying to be positive.
You lost me at Rob Marshall, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried. Good cast,
no,
great cast.
Great cast,
Colin
come
Firth.
On, come on.
Good guy, good
Keep
guy.
The faith.
Good guy. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, Donald Gleeson's playing Mr. McGregor from Peter Rabbit, but...
We've already had the week's most exciting Gleeson casting news.
I don't even know how to approach that, so let's just skip over it.
Oh, what did you think of the... Have you seen the Twin Peaks featurette thing? Have you seen that?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Okay.
So, good chat.
Time for this week's guest. It was a behind-the-scenes featurette for Twin Peaks, in which Kyle MacLachlan clearly has a portrait in his attic. I mean, he just looks freakishly young, and it's getting me excited for the inevitable disappointment. It's going to be great. Twin Peaks, David Lynch, it's coming back. So I urge you to see it at your earliest convenience. Okay, time now for this week's guest. She is one of Canada's finest exports, along with maple syrup and The Shat. She made her bones in the hit sitcom How I Met Your Mother and has recently turned her attention to kicking ass on the big screen, first as Maria Hill in the MCU. What's her electric bill like? And now as Major Susan Turner, every bit the equal of Tom Cruise's Jack Reacher in Jack Reacher Never Go Back. She is, of course, the delightful Kobe Smulders, and she came into our sweltering sweatbox. We've had an air conditioning malfunction for a nice old natter. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by Kobe Smulders, star of Jack Reacher, colon, Never Go Back.
Hello.
How are you?
Can I do the interview in this voice?
You can, but it means I have to do the interview in this voice.
One of us has to be masculine.
There has to be a
cartoon. One has to be feminine. That's just the world in which we live. It's
one has to be a cartoon character.
Balance it out.
How are you?
I'm
All
doing
good?
Great. Yeah? I'm doing wonderful. I'm in London, which is such a wonderful city.
Yeah, it's okay. We're pretty proud of it.
It's a good.
Happy.
It's a good place to be.
Yeah. Are you here for long? Have you had
I'm
a chance
to? I'm here for like a day.
Oh my god.
So I'm just like looking out enviously out my window and just looking at everybody walking by and wanting to take in the city, but I don't think I have any time.
Oh my god. So no wing spreading time. There's a premiere tonight.
Then we get on a plane to Berlin. We're doing the Graham Norton show and then get on a plane right after.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's intense today. It's a big day today.
Yeah. And people asking the same questions over and over again, I imagine.
Similar questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all in all, I mean, people tend to switch it up. Right?
And then you come in here
and then
and you get the same questions.
So when your parents divorced, what was that like for you?
Let's
get deep. Let's go dark today.
That's my warm up. And then I go proper deep from that point on. I imagine you get it quite a lot of what was it like meeting Tom Cruise for the first time?
I do get that a lot. Yeah. Do you want to know the answer? Do we want to go there?
Well, that was my sneaky way of asking it without making it seem like I was asking it.
It was amazing. The unexpected thing, because I think that everybody knows or expects him to be sort of larger than life, sort of very committed, really. Like, I mean, he's an amazing filmmaker and a true cinephile and has worked with some of the world's greatest directors and has, you know, benefited from that. But what I didn't know for me personally was, you know, when I read the script and after reading the book, like, Susan Turner is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Tom Cruise movie. So I will probably be delegated to, you know, being in the passenger seat for most of this film. And because Tom is so generous, we would approach a scene and we would all read it, and he would be like, you know what, Susan Turner should be doing this. Like, Susan Turner is as equally capable, sometimes in situations more, you know, more prepared, more in like the military know, because she's serving, you know. So I would benefit from from that type of thinking, and I would do what Jack Reacher was sort of scripted to do. And
yeah,
that wasn't what I was expecting joining onto this film. I really was like, listen, this is Tom's movie. This is, you know, this is about Jack Reacher. And and luckily, you know, he really sort of boosted the character and thus my confidence when playing her.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right, because it is, you know, very much a partnership of equals in the movie, I would say. There's not a lot of mansplaining in this movie. You don't get a lot of Reacher talking down to Turner or patronizing Turner. You know, she's very much someone who will slap him in the face if he steps out of line.
She will stand up for herself. Yeah.
Yeah. Were absolutely. You like that with Tom? If he Tom-splained to you, did you smack him down just to put him in his place?
I mean, there wasn't really any moments like that. And I think that once he saw, like, I'm a very competitive person and I'm also quite stubborn. And so when it came to, you know, we went to New Orleans, and we arrived in New Orleans about 6 to 8 weeks before we started shooting this thing. And once he saw that I was actually, like, really committed and took it very seriously, there wasn't any moment of, like, you know, trying to do anything. It was like, she's obviously working really hard and she's going to continue to do so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you had just, I believe, broken your leg.
Yeah, I was newly off of crutches, so I was on crutches for 6 weeks, and then I was off. Like, I met Ed Zwick when I was on crutches, and I don't know how I convinced him. Like, I'm totally tough. I am ready to do this action movie. I'm going to do all my own stunts. I manipulated the situation in a way that I don't know. I convinced him to give me a shot. But when I met Tom, I remember specifically, actually, I was allowed, like, I'd gone to the doctor and they're like, okay, I think you can start using a cane, which is, like, so cool. So I bought this, like, you know, cane from the drugstore, and I was kind of walking around with it. And I was like, I can't walk into the room meeting Tom Cruise for the first time with a cane. I can't do that. So I just, like, I was like, I'm just going to walk it. Fuck it. I'm just going to wear this brace underneath my clothes and just, like, be really cool about it. And I just made it that I was just a slow walker. I just kind of walked, kind of took my time. I mean, it seemed like that's just my personality.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm just taking in, the stroll.
Well, you're scanning the room for threats, which is what Susan Turner.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you see, exactly. It's all how you phrase it.
Analyzing every angle.
It's all how you pitch it.
Yeah, it's not because I'm a massive pain, Tom. It's fine, Tom. I think I'll stand.
Yeah,
I'd rather,
I'm just gonna stand. No, you guys go ahead. I just really want to look at this view here. So you go ahead. No, I'll be right behind you.
Were you tempted to do the Gene Wilder and Willy Wonka thing and walk in with the cane and then walk up to him and just suddenly somersault into action? and then you probably broke,
like,
your leg.
But that's how I felt when I got to New Orleans. I think I did some kind of, like, you know, kick the door down move, because when I finally got to New Orleans, between the time I met Tom for the first time and going to New Orleans for rehearsals, there was like 3 weeks. And I was training a lot in that time by myself with a trainer in New York City. So I was feeling just so much more physically confident. Mm. And I was like, I did it. I'm here. I'm ready for... Oh, God, I'm exhausted. Oh, no, I'm in trouble. There was a moment when I saw him for the first time in New Orleans that I was pretending to be stronger than I was, I think.
Absolutely. Were you in full tip-top physical condition when you first met Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I'd been off the movie, so I was off of training for a couple of months, but I definitely felt more confident than I did while starting Reacher.
And going back, before we talk about that, because that's a project I'm really intrigued by, which is Why We're Killing Gunther. Last time we spoke about this movie, you told me that you had only read Never Go Back.
Yes.
Is that still the case?
I did. I have read it, yeah. I read it, I think, I met Ed first, and so Ed pitched the... project to me. And I like how I say that because I make it seem like he asked me if I was available. Like, it was not like that. We just had a conversation about it to see if mutually I would be into the film. But I think then I saw the movie, and then when I was going to go meet Tom and we did this table read, I started reading the book. But I hadn't read any of the books before that. Mm-hmm. But it was a great read. I mean, he's an amazing writer, Lee Chow. Yeah. And I also don't know how he's written so many of these books.
Yeah.
He's coming out with the 21st next month. He just said, and I was just like, it's just amazing.
It's been one a year with one exception where it was two a year.
Oh, wow.
Since 1997, I believe. And he claims, and this is something, maybe next time you talk to him, you can ask him if this is actually BS or not. He claims to just make them up as he goes. Does no research.
Really?
Doesn't write down any plot notes.
And he just starts somehow typing and it just kind of comes to him?
Yeah.
Well, he must know the character so well at this point.
So you've only read one Reacher book. So I brought in, because I'm a big Reacher fan.
Yes, that's that's amazing.
I just happen to have Reacher books on my person at all times in case people challenge me to a duel. That's okay. Which happens over here. So I want to hook you. I want to hook you by reading.
Yeah, yeah.
Because first lines are important, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. No, is this you're going to read the first line of the book?
Yeah, this is book number 15. This is The Affair.
Okay. What book? Sorry, book 15?
15.
15, okay.
Yeah, I know that. I know the numbers. Why do I know that? It's really weird. Okay, so I'm going to read this to you, and then I'm going to hook you.
Okay.
The Pentagon is the world's largest office building. 6.5 million square feet, 30,000 people, more than 17 miles of corridors, but it was built with just 3 street doors, each one of them opening into a guarded pedestrian lobby. Boom.
Boom.
Gotcha, haven't I?
Boom.
You want to know more?
He's a British guy. He writes so much about American politics.
Yeah, precisely.
As a Brit, do you go, why don't you focus on our country and on our parliament and our, you know?
Yeah, you want Reacher to come over here and sort things out.
Yeah, does Reacher ever come?
He has. He's been to, he's been a couple of times.
He has.
Yeah. Yeah, so you just wanted to come over and knock some heads together, but he's interested in Americana. But this is interesting. See, he says he hasn't researched that, so that could all be bollocks about the Pentagon. We don't know.
Well, he says he hasn't researched. Somebody's got to make sure that those are right.
He might have just made that up. We don't know.
That sounds right.
It's all fiction, Kobe. We don't know if it's really real.
We don't know what's real.
Is Susan Turner real? I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, that's the thing. Did you do research into this character? Is this
so much? That was actually the best part of this film for me, other than just getting crushed in a gym multiple hours a day. It was really fascinating because, you know, I'm Canadian and I'm also a pacifist, so I didn't know much about the military. What I was really kind of trying to figure out at the beginning was, how do you go from, you know, enlisting and going, I want to be a part of the military, I want to go into service, to then getting and earning the rank of major. And how does that work? And so I spent a lot of time like researching that and formulating this background for this woman. And then adding to that, I read a lot of, I read an amazing book called Redeployment, which is really a real firsthand account from many soldiers serving overseas and then also coming back home and dealing with having been through that experience. And then another book called Band of Sisters, which is specifically about women in the military and their experiences overseas. And I mean, it's real tough. Yeah. I mean, and it's also what I took away from it, and it's just my own personal takeaway, is that everybody's journey is different.
Yeah.
And there are so many negative stories about women in the military and the things that they've suffered through. And then I go and I meet two women, a colonel and a major at a base in Virginia, and talk to them, and they had nothing but amazing positive things to report back. And I found that it really depends on who's in charge of you, who you surround yourself with, because those people above you are either going to raise you up or they're going to keep you down. And I think that that's sort of the journey for both women and men in the military. But it is such a unique job, and it's such an honorable choice. I mean, I can't imagine having that type of commitment to. You know, just saying, like, I sacrificed my life for this and I believe in this country. And I think it takes a real honorable, good person to do that.
Making the transition from TV to film. There may be too much made of how that is a transition these days. Mm. But you went from a sitcom to movies with an audience, live audience, I mean, multi-camera, which I imagine must really impact your style of acting. When you're feeding off audiences and when you're feeding off your other actors as well for the lines, the feed lines and whatnot, and then you're suddenly in a movie situation kicking ass, whether it's a Susan Turner or a Maria Hill. Is that fundamentally different? I mean, what's that experience like for you?
Well, I will say on How I Met Your Mother, we didn't have a live audience.
Oh, really?
They throw in that laugh track, but they
were
not people.
That's a laugh track. That's a genuine laugh track.
It's a genuine laugh track.
Ah, okay.
So, but there is...
Because of the nature of the flashbacks and
yes,
whatnot. Yes, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it for our show, it was just... You know, in each episode we had 50-plus scenes, and it just, it isn't the type of show that would do well in front of an audience just because it's too fragmented.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It is staged in the same way where you kind of are on stage for these four cameras and for our crew, and it's a different type of rhythm, which is something that I had to learn first because it was the first comedy that I had done. So, I don't know. I think it's just... Because maybe it was more intimate, it didn't seem like such a transition. But there was definitely, I do remember, like, there were moments, because it was funny, when I got on How I Met Your Mother, they were like, you need to be much louder. Because, and I wasn't used to sort of presenting myself to these cameras. I was used to, like, playing a scene and, like, used to going, you know, used to having coverage. And then I had to... go back into the world of films, and they're like, you need to be quiet. You need to tank it down. And you need to, like, you know, you can talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, so there was sort of this physical transition that I had to wrap my brain around. But I think that I was so lucky because, you know, in How I Met Your Mother, it is a sitcom and it is a comedy, but we were also able to do these extremely intimate scenes. Yeah. We had a lot of, especially speaking for me, the character of Robin Scherbatsky is a character who, you know, went from being playing a teenage pop star in flashback to being a woman who has to go through the concept that she's not able to have children and like having this emotional arc through that one season. And so it was that was amazing that the writers and the creators kind of gave us these challenges and these moments. So I never felt like I was, you know, the mother of the young kid in the show carrying laundry throughout the scene and rolling my eyes at, like, oh, Freddie. You know, it's like we got to do a lot of different things, and I benefited from that just moving forward.
The laugh track revelation has blown my mind. I did not know a lot about that show. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Amazing fact. We put a laugh track on this.
Oh, good.
Well.
Yeah, thank God.
There's going to be a laugh track.
I wish I lived my life with a laugh track. That'd be great.
If you walked into a room and people greeted you with laughter and applause, that'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
That would be amazing. Yeah.
Would you have a theme tune? If you walked into a room, would you have a theme tune?
I think it would just be trumpets. You know, some sort of, just some sort of, like, nice little, so I could just kind of walk in with, like, a
That was
a
very
hop.
Cool jazzy trumpet.
Thank you.
I expected more of a sort of...
No. It's sort of like, you know, kind of start your day type of walking down the street. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. So the show was obviously called How I Met Your Mother. It wasn't called How I Kicked Your Mother in the Face and Twisted Her Neck. So
no, that was a working title.
That
one
was
didn't.
A title.
Yeah, I mean, we pitched it. It didn't go over well.
It's such a shame. Such a shame. So how did the transition from that show and from Robin into Maria Hill and Susan Turner and someone who is one of Hollywood's premier ass kickers right now?
Thank you.
I'm going to say that.
That's kind.
It's on the record.
That's very kind.
No laugh track in that one, please.
No.
Are you serious? How did that happen? Are you still kind of going, what?
Yeah, well, I was on How I Met Your Mother. Joss Whedon is a friend of mine. And when the first Avengers rolled around, he sort of championed me and brought me into the mix. And I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea why I got hired to play these, like, you know, really tough, strong, stubborn women. Because I'm not very, you know, I'm just not like that. Like I said at the beginning, I'm a pacifist. I'm Canadian. It's like, kind of goes against, and maybe that's why it's easy for me to hook into. I don't know. But the whole thing with Maria Hill started because of Joss, because he's my friend.
Yeah.
And then For Susan Turner, I don't quite know. I think it is that Ed saw this movie that I did with Andrew Bajowski called Results, in which I play a personal trainer. And I think he saw that because I don't think he said he's never seen any of the he's never seen any Avengers films.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He hasn't seen any of them.
Yeah.
But he did. I think he said that he saw Results and saw something in that that could translate to the character of Susan Turner.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So do you feel at a home in characters with characters like Maria and Susan Turner being a pacifist and being a Canadian pacifist at that?
Yeah. Not really. I mean, not really. It takes me a while to figure out these women. Susan Turner especially. And I know, I mean, even on set, Ed was like, you got to get harder. Because to me, you know, my scale of anger or anger is not right. Because I think like I'm doing a scene, I'm like, whoa, that was like really intense. And I was like, no, you weren't angry enough. Because my, what is it called? Like a scale, like a Richter scale. It's not a Richter
scale.
Yeah,
your sliding scale, I guess.
My sliding scale, yeah. For anger and being mean is so off. So I needed Ed to sort of be like, no, Susan Turner is much angrier. And she's much more, you know, you need to be much more direct with him. And so he sort of helped me through that.
Loads of Avengers movies coming up, about 45 more Avengers movies, I believe. Have you had the call? What's the latest?
I can't say anything about
anything. Of course
anything.
You can say anything. I
like to work in these movies. I'd like to continue to work in these movies. So if I start talking about things and people in things and what happens in things, then they don't you know, invite me to come and play.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, I've interviewed a lot of people involved with Marvel movies and other movies like that over the years. And a lot of them say, if I say something, a red dot will appear on my forehead.
Yeah.
You know what? It hasn't happened yet. I don't think they're listening yet.
Yeah, that's true, because people have like done spoilers and stuff and they continue to be in. I just, I want to keep my job, but it's also... But it's also, I don't want to ruin it for fans.
Sure, sure.
One of the exciting things, like, when you are a fan is to see this movie the first time, not know what's happening, and be surprised. And so I like to keep, you know, the surprise alive.
Absolutely. Yeah, it will be surprising. So perhaps, I don't know, perhaps Maria Hill will be in a different position each movie, but like Lee Child. In the Jack Reacher
films. You can make any sort of assumption you want in this moment.
It's not an assumption. I'm just putting it out there as an idea should the Russo brothers be listening, which I'm sure they are. Hi, Anthony. Hi, Joe.
Because they're not busy at all.
They're
just like sitting around.
Well, that's the thing. They go, oh, Kobe Smulders is on the Empire podcast. We must listen to it in case she's spilling secrets. And then we have to get red dot people in.
Yeah, yeah.
And the last thing I want to talk about is your husband's film, Taron Killam's film, Why We're Killing Gunther, with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think you had just wrapped it last time we spoke.
Yes.
How this film sounds fascinating to me. It's a comedy about a group of hitmen trying to kill the world's greatest hitman. Is that
That's essentially it. But to add to that, it's shot documentary style. It's about this group of killers that have also hired this crew to follow them around and record everything, so they have evidence.
Okay.
And so it's my husband is a very funny man, and he's very talented, and so it's very funny. And there's so many great actors in it as well, including Schwarzenegger. But it's the style of it is really interesting, and it's very new, and it's just really cool. So he's editing that right now, and I don't know when it's, you know, who knows when things come out, but it is one to be enjoyed for sure.
And a big Arnie, I'm presuming it's Gunther.
I don't know. You're gonna have to watch the film to find out.
And who do you play?
I play Taryn's ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. I'm looking forward to that one.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, fantastic. And Kobe, I will let you go with one last quote.
Okay, let's
from
hear
Jack
it.
Reacher.
Yeah.
Book 15, The Affair. See if you get you hooked.
Okay.
I showered and dressed in the dark. Socks, boxers, pants, my old tee, my new shirt. I laced my shoes and put my toothbrush in my pocket with a pack of gum and a roll of bills. I left everything else behind.
Whoa.
Now you're hooked.
I'm in.
Kobe, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
So there was Kobe Smulders. Kobe Smulders. And should we start with a movie in which she stars?
Yeah,
Jack Reacher Never Go Back, the second Jack Reacher movie based on the 18th Jack Reacher novel. Why do I know this stuff?
Because you wrote the feature, remember?
I know, but I knew it anyway. Why? what useful information has been squeezed out of my head? What life, potentially life-saving information? For example, if either one of you dropped dead of a heart attack right now, I'd be no use to. But if you had a life-threatening situation right now, I don't know what I can't remember what to do. But I can remember that Never Go Back is the 18th Jack Reacher novel.
But that probably also means that you know, for example, the history of Boots the Chemist. Because you remember those novels so well.
Yeah.
And that could be useful.
That could be useful. I could go, oh, I know the history. Let's go to the chemist. The pharmacist will do you right.
So, Never Go Back, the second Jack Reacher film. As you say, sees Jack Reacher heading to DC because he's talked to Major Susan Turner, Kobe Smulders' character, on the phone, and thinks she has a nice voice, and he wants to take her out to dinner.
That's literally it.
I'm not kidding.
So, John, have you ever done that? Have you ever listened, talked to a lady on the phone, then travelled 600 miles to see her in a really weird...
In my lonelier nights.
Helen, have you ever done that? Have you ever listened to a guy's voice, and then turned up on his doorstep?
No.
Okay. It could be either construed as a really, really romantic gesture or
stalkers.
Or security, pressing a silent alarm.
Well, anyway.
Anyway, carry on.
She's not too worried about security, presumably, because she's a major in the army and is pretty kick-ass in her own right. But it doesn't really matter, because when he does get to Washington, D.C. to meet her, he discovers that she's been arrested on a charge of espionage and treason, or both, one or both. Anyway,
doesn't matter.
So she's locked up, and soon Reacher himself is dragged back into the army and locked up alongside her.
What?
So he decides that there's only one thing to do, which is, of course, escape, take her with him, and solve the entire mystery that led to them being, spoiler, framed in the first place. There is a complication in that Reacher is informed that he has a daughter he never knew about.
What?
I know. And her name is Sam. She's played by Danica Yarosh. And so the baddies are after her too, because they have also discovered that Jack Reacher has a daughter he never knew about and are using her to get to him. So that's the setup.
God.
I mean, it's basically the entire film, really, because the bad guys don't make that much of an impression, I didn't think, this time. I mean, last time you had the enormous advantage of one of them being Werner Herzog.
Jay Courtney,
and the slightly less enormous advantage of one of them being...
Jai Courtney. I like him in that film.
He's good in that film. Yeah. But this time they really struggled to make an impact. What was it? The Hunter? He doesn't even get a name, does he? He's just the Hunter.
Well, yeah. The Sec, the Hunter, who's not a character from the book, by the way. I will say, if you're going into this expecting a straight adaptation of, because Jack Reacher, the film, was a fairly straight adaptation of one shot. This is not. This deviates from the book in major, major ways. Major Turner ways. Major Reacher ways. Major ways. So there will be surprises, or the movie developed in ways I did not expect. Mm. But I think you're right. I think for me, this is a fine, solid, straight down the middle. Ed Zwick is the director, and he is a man who directs fine, solid, straight down the middle, if slightly pedestrian, movies. I would say, if you look at his career, Glory and Courage Under Fire and The Last Samurai, of course, his last movie with Tom Cruise. I think he said Tom Skerritt. That's weird. Tom Cruise and Defiance, and these are movies that are fine. They're okay, but I don't know if you get home of a night and go, I have an Ed Zwick double bill.
I don't think that happens a lot. There's a couple of really effective action scenes, I thought. There's a bit in a restaurant kitchen, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a very subtle little fight on a plane, which I liked a lot. You may have glimpsed some of that in the trailer, unfortunately. And there's some New Orleans stuff a bit later on in the film, which, again, you've probably glimpsed in the trailer. I had issues with it. I don't think... If anything, I thought it could have been adapted a little more. I thought that some of the... You know, the story was written a good few years ago now, and some of the technology as a result feels quite clunky. And given that they don't appear to be trying to make it a period piece, it feels odd sometimes that people are communicating in ways that they are.
Interesting.
Cruise, who continues to look nothing like Jack Reacher, unsurprisingly... he is such a good actor, and he is so charismatic that you can almost forget about it for large periods of time.
That's interesting you say that. I thought he was slightly muzzled in his charisma in this film. I don't know the Reacher books.
No, but you're right. He's trying to rein it in very much.
He reins it in a lot. Mm. I mean, I know that from what I understand, Jack Reacher is a very stoic man, right? He's a very, Reacher said nothing, is, you know, he doesn't say much. And I thought this kind of worked against his favour a little bit. So there's this whole subplot about his potential daughter, which is a little bit formulaic, perhaps. And I just thought, you're trying to play this emotionally inarticulate man. It doesn't really sort of translate to screen. It just comes across as a little...
I wonder if they went a little early with this book. I wonder if this maybe should have been the third film, because I think you needed maybe two films with him on his own to really establish the character and establish the lone wolf nature of the character before you, and the fact he has no attachments, before you throw him into a situation where he is on the run with a woman who may be his daughter.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I don't think he's quite, they've quite earned that yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I think it's fine. The action sequences are fine. As someone who was quite vocal about Cruise's casting at the time, I've totally come around it, actually, because this is Jack Reacher movies we're going to get. This is it. So I'm happy with that. I'm happy that we're getting Jack Reacher movies. But also, Lee Child's creation is 6'5". He's 250 pounds.
Yeah.
And if you put a character with those dimensions, you know, that's shorter than Peter Crouch, but heavier than Peter Crouch, just if you want to get an idea.
It's roughly the size of The Rock, is what it is. He's about 250 pounds.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think The Rock's not quite that tall, is he? He's not 6'5".
He's meant to be... Oh, I looked online. Certainly at one point they were claiming he was.
Yeah, oh, I've met him. He's met him. He's not that big and all that. The Rock...
The Rock, if you're listening, please come and hit.
And
Chris.
I'd say it to
someone else's face.
Someone else's face. A character that big walks into the scene. He dominates the scene. He changes the dynamics of the scene and the type of movie this is, especially a Reacher on the run. You have having Cruise means he can walk into a room, he can walk into any situation and be the underdog and be underestimated. And I think that actually works in the favor of a big screen thriller. Having said that, of course, you know, 10 years time, I'd love to see a reboot with an actor who reaches physical dimensions, but that's fine. I'm happy with what we have for the time being. We gave this 4 stars. I'd maybe go high 3, but it's still a good, as I say, solid straight down the middle thriller. Next up, we have the return of Ken Loach. We thought he'd retired. Just when we thought he was out, he pulls himself back in with I, Daniel Blake, which is his second Palme d'Or winning film. He won 10 years ago with The Wind That Shakes the Barley. He came back this year triumphantly, just 2 years after Jimmy's Hall, with I, Daniel Blake, and scooped the Palme d'Or over there at the Cannes Film Festival. And is it worthy, Helen?
Oh, it very much is. Yeah, let's be honest. So this is an incredibly timely story. Dave Johns, who apparently is a stand-up in real life, which I didn't know about, but he plays a joiner, a former joiner called Daniel Blake, obviously. He's widowed, he has a heart condition, and he finds himself trapped in the benefits system. So this is a pretty nakedly political with a small p film. His heart condition means he isn't fit to take a job, but they won't accept that it's enough for him to claim benefits. So he's kind of in this horrendous hinterland, just basically trapped by red tape. And he tries to help another person in a similar situation, who is Hayley Squires, Katie. She's a single mother. She equally is having trouble trying to get any kind of assistance, any kind of help to maintain herself and her children. And it's a sort of a rather tragic drama with the two of them struggling against this really inhuman system, you know. Tiny little things go wrong for him. I mean, he's handwritten his CV. He's not comfortable with computers. That isn't good enough for them. He doesn't get receipts from a foreman, so that stops him from getting to the next stage. You know, like, it's just one obstacle placed in his way after another, and it's incredibly hard to watch in some ways. It's just too close to home. It's too realistic, I think, which is pretty tough. But, I mean, that's kind of, I guess, what you expect from Ken Loach. It's a film that isn't angry anymore. I don't think it isn't, you know, I mean, there are moments of anger in it, but it's not castigating the system. It's just almost it's almost as a film, it's downtrodden and depressed, yeah, as well as its characters.
It's a weary sigh.
It is a weary sigh. Yeah. I mean, we've gone so far. Can we ever get back to a sort of a human system? It's really tragic. So yeah, I mean, Andrew in our review has said someone should project this on the wall of the Department for Work and Pensions. And my God, I wish they would watch it. Like, get the Clockwork Orange device and sit beaming it into their eyeballs, beam it into the eyeballs of the entire cabinet until we can sort this situation out. But yeah, this is a seriously powerful film. I mean, great
performances all, yeah.
Absolutely great performances, and Ken Loach really very much at the top of his game. So
80 years old.
Unbelievable. 4 stars from us. And I know there are certain people in this office who would comfortably have gone 5.
So yeah, there we go. Daniel Blake, fantastic stuff. And it's a good week for 4-star films. We have 4 stars for Jack Reacher, Never Go Back. We have 4 stars for I, Daniel Blake, Never Go Back. And now we have, I may have spoiled it slightly, but we have Queen of Catway, Never Go Back. Hell's Bells.
Yeah, this one, thank goodness, is a little bit more heartwarming in its treatment of poverty and deprivation. It's a real life story. It's about a young girl who was growing up in one of the poorest areas of Uganda. Her name is Fiona Mutesi. She's played by Medina Nelwanga, pretty much a newcomer. And she discovers an aptitude for tests. She basically wanders into David Oyelowo's classes one day and discovers this whole world that she had not previously come across. And she is unbelievably talented at the game, basically, and this is her story from progressing from this complete neophyte status, never having really come across chess before, to becoming an international competitor in the game, which is pretty stunning. So, I mean, there are all of these kind of cliches that the film has to kind of negotiate their way around. I mean, this is, you know, the shy child who lives in horrendously difficult circumstances, who's introduced to an elite world and has to kind of beat the snobs of that world at their own game. You know, we've seen this a million times from Karate Kid, you name it. But Mira Nair, who directs, I think, lets a lot of that kind of be underplayed, I guess, and not kind of hit it too heavily. It doesn't wallow in just the misery of her situation to begin with. It doesn't lose the kind of humanity of the situation, I guess, that she's in at the beginning, because it, you know, and it does that by emphasizing, I think, her family, her structure around her support structure, and not just, oh, they have very little money, which I think is really good. It's fantastic to see the gorgeous face of Lupita Nyong'o back on screen. I mean, she's been behind CG for her role since she won an Oscar.
Yeah.
And she's very, very good here in the supporting role as Fiona's mother, Harriet. David Oyelowo, he's always good.
Solid.
You don't have to worry about him. Yeah.
Always good. Yeah, I love sports movies. I love underdog movies.
Yeah. Well, this will be to your taste then.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 stars.
The only movie I really liked, have you guys ever seen Coach Carter?
Yeah.
I really liked Coach Carter.
Coach Carter's good.
I really liked it. It's one of those movies I might, you know, if you're fumbling around Netflix, you happen upon Coach Carter, I might stick that on for a little while. It's good. But speaking of chess movies, one that got really overlooked a couple of years ago, it was potentially an awards contender, but then it just fell off the map, is an Ed Zwick film, Pawn Sacrifice, about the Bobby Fischer and Boris Spassky. Their company. This is Tobey Maguire. As really good film, really good film. Check it out, Pawn Sacrifice.
All right.
Damn it! Getting angry. I'm getting like Ken Loach about the benefit system about a movie about chess. Also out this week, we have an animated movie, Happy Go Lucky animated movie. I had my picture taken with the mascots when they were at Empire Live. As you know, I go nuts for people in costume, jobbing actors dressed in costumes. So this is Trolls,
yes, yeah. Anna Kendrick is our heroine, Poppy, and Justin Timberlake plays her friend, kind of friend, Branch. The setup of the story is this. The trolls are small, adorable creatures who live in constant fear of being eaten by larger troll-like creatures called the Bergen. Basically, the Bergen used to, every year, once a year, they would have a day where they all ate trolls. Until the trolls, led by Poppy's father, tunneled away and escaped and are now living in freedom in the wilderness. But they live in constant fear all the same. And meanwhile, the Bergens are miserable because the only thing that ever made them happy is eating trolls.
Oh.
I know. So they're, so they, you know, they have some humanity because they're just, they're really depressed and the only thing that makes them happy is gone. And that's kind of the setup. So one day a Bergen discovers these trolls, basically kidnaps all of Poppy's friends and decides to eat them. And Branch, who is luckily extremely paranoid, has been hiding in a bunker, so he's okay. But he very, very reluctantly agrees to go with her and try and rescue her friends. And in the same way, they all have to find a way to bring happiness and peace between these two warring nations of various sizes. I mean, it's cuter than a puppy rolling in glitter. Like, this is super cute, okay? Chris, you've gone misty-eyed there. Please, come back to us.
I love puppies. Fried, boiled, it doesn't matter to me.
Oh.
It's a joke.
But no, it's super, super
like
cute. But it does have an edge. Like, some of the stuff with trolls being eaten is actually quite scary for little kids or me. And also, there's Poppy goes on this epic journey and she sings a really jaunty song, so you may not notice. If you actually pay attention during that sort of montage of that journey, she gets eaten several times by several different things and just makes her way through
the...
Yeah.
Okay.
To continue onwards.
Wow.
Which I have not seen in a cartoon before.
Is it an allegory for internet trolls then?
Maybe. So maybe they're just sad, lonely people who just need someone to throw glitter at them to cheer up. You know, that's possible. Anyway, I thought it was cute and I quite liked it, even though it's very, very silly and childish, which may say something about me. And we gave that... 3 stars.
3 stars. And also out this week, we have pretty poor comedy, actually. Keeping Up with the Joneses, an action comedy with Zach Galifianakis and Isla Fisher as an ordinary married couple in next door neighbours move in, played by John Hamm and Gal Gadot, looking glamorous and they're super sexy and super slick. Arlie spies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or no?
No, it's just... It's such a shame because it's directed by Greg Mottola and it's just a lit. It's just really undercooked.
Oh.
Really undercooked. Or underbaked. Whichever. Choose your cooking show metaphor.
I wouldn't, in case it's a spoiler for last night's Bake Off, which you still haven't seen.
I still haven't seen it. I still haven't seen it. I swear to God, if you spoil Bake Off for me, I will end you.
The power.
Yeah, the power that the listeners have. I'm going to try and see Bake Off before this podcast goes out because irony of the spoiler hunter being spoiled by. Those who seek to spoil a spoiler hunter would be.
How can there be spoilers? I don't understand.
It's an elimination show, John.
It's just cakes, right? What's the spoiler?
It's just cakes.
Just cakes.
And Westworld's just robots, is it?
Yeah.
And Game of Thrones is just, you know.
Dragons and swords and treachery and.
Is it?
I don't think there's layers in the Great Bake Off.
There are layers. That's the whole point.
I'm talking about metaphorical layers here, not pastry-based
layers. There are metaphorical layers too.
Yeah. There's more layers than a Carrie Fisher character reunion thing. That's how many layers
there's
are.
There's more layers than a 20-layer cake, which is a thing.
There's more layers than a 21-layer cake, is that a thing?
That's not a
thing. That's not a thing. Okay.
Is there a Kaiser Soze sort of figure?
Yes, Paul Hollywood. it's an elimination show. So you get attached to the personalities, right? And then each week someone gets killed.
Yeah.
I believe that's my understanding.
They're taken away.
Baked in an oven, okay. Rickerman style.
Yeah.
And you get genuinely upset and you get invested in them.
If I were to tell Chris that Bob went out last night.
Bob, my favourite!
Like, he would be really upset.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Keep It Up with the Joneses is a 2-star film, really. Bit rubbish.
Yep.
All right.
Bit of a shame.
Ah, oh well.
One of those things you can feel them. Improvising, you can feel them stretching against the confines of a middling script. Bit like this every week. If you're wondering where the Doctor Strange review is, we haven't seen it yet. It's out on Tuesday. We will be seeing it very, very soon. There will be an Empire review up accordingly. Word from on the States is good.
Yeah.
Broke overnight, so fingers crossed for that one.
There will also have been a Logan trailer by the time you hear this, but only one of us has had a preview of that so far, so only one of us can say that she's really quite excited by it. Yeah.
Hang on a second.
And she thought it was really intriguing. It gives you a really good impression of that this film will have a very different tone to the ones we've seen before. That it will be almost entirely a polar opposite to X-Men Apocalypse in particular, but also a far cry from the previous films about Logan, about Wolverine.
Wow, I mean, that's very... That's
mysterious, right?
Very specific for a guess.
Well, I mean, if I were guessing, that's what I would probably say, that's all.
Who is it?
Me. It's me.
You?
Yeah. I saw it. Ha ha ha.
Holy cow.
Only because we will also have a trailer breakdown up on the website with contributions from the film's director, James Mangold, so do please check that out.
Yes, which you need to write after this, and we're running out of time. So yeah. I'm gonna wrap this thing up. I'm going to bring this bad boy in. I'm going to stick the landing.
It'll be the first time for everything.
Watch me. Watch me, okay? So Doctor Strange, review will be up soon. There will be a spoiler special, and delighted to say, with the director Scott Derrickson, that will be up, as we always do with our spoiler specials, that'll be up to after the American release. So we get it on Tuesday the 25th of October. America gets it November 4th, I just checked. So our podcast will be up November 7th, unless things do change. If they do, obviously we'll keep you guys posted. Sorry for the long wait, but we always like to be fair as possible to our American cousins.
God knows they're having a difficult enough time at the moment.
November 7th.
That's election day, isn't
it? The day before. This spoiler podcast could swing the entire thing.
Our Doctor Strange spoiler podcast is the best Doctor Strange spoiler podcast. So many people have told me it's huge. Huge.
Nobody respects Doctor Strange more than me.
Just imagine, you know, if you work the iPhone with your tiny hand on November 7th, you know, maybe we can use it as an agent for change. Sticking the landing. Okay, that's it for this week's
episode. Brace.
That's it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun, where we'll be joined by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Ooh.
What's he here to promote? What's he doing?
Nocturnal Animals?
Nocturnal Animals! Sticking the landing. And one of the stars of Doctor Strange, Mads Mikkelsen, he'll be in as well.
Oh, he doesn't have any hardcore fans who are going to want to listen to that. What a shame.
What's he been in that people want to know
what
about?
What cult hits has he made?
Has he got like the best hair in movies right now?
Well, no. Obviously, there's the twin hair gods of Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Oscar Isaacs and
No, there's something
Adam
about
Driver.
His colouring that I really like.
I mean, he's wonderful, don't get me wrong. I think it's more the suits and the face.
It's more the suits and the face. Yeah, he'd be a good Willy Wonka.
He would be a great Willy Wonka. We are sticking the landing, aren't we?
No, we're circling. You know the thing when you come into Heathrow and
yeah,
we're circling.
Okay,
until the next time, it's goodbye from Helen.
Bye bye.
It's goodbye from John.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from me. I'm off to the Batcave to confront a Mr. B-Man about this rather large unpaid electricity bill. I'm sure everything will go just swimmingly. See you next week. Bye.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.